Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Tunnel Talk, and No Facts, All Feelings Wrestling Podcast on the Social Suplex Network. I'm Allie.
I'm Ann.
And I'm Leah.
Girls, how you doing this week?
It's hot again. It started to not be hot, but it's hot again.
That weather's always weathering.
Do you like that, like, most of the weeks we open Tunnel Talk with weather talk?
Do think we overdo it, actually. I'm like, we need to...
We can't bring up the weather anymore. Okay, new rule.
I think only on special occasions, you know what I mean? Like...
I hear you. I'm scared of what you're saying. It's just kind of hard to imagine.
I mean, I can't stop you, certainly. And, of course, there's always something to say about the weather.
It's always out there.
I like it because it's non-personal.
I know you do.
Jesus Christ, Leah.
Yeah.
I like a little play. I like to speak to you guys as if we're strangers in the supermarket. Boy, it's hot out there.
I don't like this.
Now you feel more opposed to weather talk,
yeah,
don't you, Allie?
Yeah, now I'm banning weather talk. Look what you did to yourself. I was on your side. I said, it's nice to have a little chit-chat about the weather. No, if you ever mention the weather again on this podcast, you'll be fucking sorry. Unless you're in the middle of a hurricane, a monsoon, a tornado, any of those three. Any other high-intensity wind events.
Tsunami.
And I hope you enjoyed taking over opening chit-chat.
You better come up with a new topic, bitch.
Okay, I hate it here.
Okay, miss, if you can take that attitude, you can go to your room.
How come my feelings and my comfort are never regarded?
Listen,
in the spinoff, in the secret Discord I have with our listeners who support me, they all agree that I am taken advantage of on this podcast.
Let me ask you a question. Uh-huh. Yeah. How much do your listeners...
We call them the bells.
How much do they truly support you? Because, like, the point of a podcast is to share information. Like, it's literally, so that's why we're here. Like, if we weren't doing a podcast, then I guess you could just never tell us your friends about anything other than the weather.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, we started this podcast.
And I guess you will just be happier on Keeping It Strong style where no one will ever ask you about your dance classes.
I didn't know.
Jeremy, you keep your eyes open, buddy. We're coming for you.
We're coming for you. Listen. I didn't know that the appeal of men is that they don't know anything about each other.
The appeal of men.
Yeah, maybe you should go have some male friendships, Leah. Would that make you happier?
Yeah, go to the pick a basketball game, Leah.
I'm going to go become a guy's girl.
I do think it's crazy from this video that James showed us was like, this made me think of Tunnel Talk about men's pickup basketball games. My friend Josh also goes to these pickup basketball games at like 6 in the morning at the YWCA. And I think also it's the same men all the time and none of them know each other's names. That's crazy. That's
classic man behavior right there.
That's insane. We have to intervene.
They're causing what I hear is a loneliness crisis and the
impact.
And Leah
wants
to be a part of it, you know?
I'm just saying, I think it's important to listen to both sides.
Both sides of what? People who believe in knowing each other's names and sharing some light, fun facts about their lives, and people who want to live in the woods and never know anything about anybody?
Yeah, both sides.
I won't listen to that. I'll never listen to that side. If you ever bring up the weather again, you're fired.
This is not going to go over well with the bells.
Okay, well, Anne, it's your week to be happy. You ready?
I would love to share something pleasant about my life. It's pleasant and meaningful, you know.
Thank you, and you're getting an A+ in podcasting. Something that's normal to want and possible to achieve.
It is possible to, Leah.
She's just mad because I know she wants an A. I know she wants an A+.
She's not getting it tonight.
I get them in other arenas. Okay. I get my hands
so perverted. So
It does.
Perverse.
What are you getting A's in, Leah?
I meant, like, helping with the schedule, but I agree it did sound like I'm giving Allie blowjobs on the side and being like, she rewards me for other things. Don't worry about it.
Under the desk as we speak.
Bleep all of that.
Bleep all of that. Bleep all of that.
Yeah, just okay. Kind of bleeps.
Be Should happy. We start the podcast over?
And can you be happy for us now? I have a headache.
I love to. Okay, so there used to be a podcast out of the New York Times, Culture Desk, by Wesley Morris and Jay Wortham called Still Processing. Mm-hmm. It's one of my very favorite podcasts. Like, just did really great, really thoughtful, interesting criticism. And you know how easy it is for people to, like, not say anything worthwhile about, like, a pop culture product.
Incredibly easy.
Yeah. But that podcast went away for, like, 2 years, and it was a real bummer. But Wesley Morris has just come back in the same feed, actually, which was really convenient because it was just like, oh, new episode for me. I'm already subscribed to it. But his new one is called Cannonball, and he just, like, has different guests on instead, but it's basically, like, the same concept. But he'll usually do, like, a deep dive into, like, one topic, and often he's really good at, like, talking about how his own experience, like, informs, like, his relationship to that, like, musician or that, like, you know, movie or whatever. Mm-hmm. In ways I think are really interesting and just thoughtful, and they always make me think about things a little bit differently, which is really cool.
Is this the one that you linked me to because he had the guy on to talk about the New York Times top 100 movies? Mm-hmm. This was the nicest thing Anne's ever done for me. I mean, no, you've actually done many very, very nice
harsh,
things for me.
But sure.
This is actually really low down on the list of nice things that Anne's done for me in our friendship. But she sent me one of these episodes because she was like, they agree with you and my friend Anna about AI. And I listened to that part, and it was the most... It was such a good experience. I was just like, everything they're saying is exactly right. And you got to hear, they both just keep going, I think I'm going to cry if I keep talking about this. Like, they're so...
It was two men who met, like, 20 years ago, like, working in a video store, and they were talking about the New York Times top 100 that Allie was talking about hating on, and it was so weird when I was listening to it, because they hit a part where they were like, it's outrageous that Steven Spielberg is not on this list, and then they started talking about AI, and I was like, I've heard this exact opinion pretty recently. So I sent it over to Allie, but it was great, and I love, you know, having men really... Like, they told each other they loved each other as they were signing off and stuff. Just like
nice.
A male non-loneliness crisis. They were sharing their lives together. So
that's really beautiful. And they shared feelings about their lives, huh? They shared facts and feelings about their lives. That's really lovely.
Yeah.
I love that.
I didn't
that.
Start this meeting to sub tweet, but it just happened and it was organic. And I think it was great.
I loved it. I thought they had such smart opinions. It was such an interesting conversation. And it was very funny because they did replicate the exact experience that Anna and I had had when discussing this, of going down this rabbit hole of being like, and the thing about Steven Spielberg is The Fabelmans is all of his other movies. All of his movies are, they're the Matryoshka doll of the daddy feelings. It was very funny. Anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. But great stuff. So I'd really recommend it. Everybody should check out that podcast. Great, great cultural criticism.
I'm going to start listening to Cannonball. Anyway, are you guys ready to talk about the week in wrestling?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. I'm actually a little scared that we started with this because I think we might have to try and say some smart stuff. And usually we try to give ourselves a warm-up section first, but I somehow didn't. MJF opened Dynamite this week.
Mm-hmm.
Let's start by saying that last week we were nice to him and we liked that he was backstage. But then I guess because we were nice to him, he got to start the show again. Do you think it was our fault?
Possibly.
It's like we can never predict what whims of ours Tony's going to reward. And it's really messed up because it's like that was not one of the things I wanted you to listen to.
That wasn't
to,
the takeaway.
You know?
That wasn't the takeaway.
Yeah.
He came out in a red velvet blazer, and we were worried he might get a chance to give a big, long speech, but he didn't because Hangman's music hit. Hangman came out. They had a back-and-forth promo in which MJF explained that Hangman is at his most vulnerable when he's angry, and he said, and I intend to make you very, very angry. So you lose your belt at your first pay-per-view defense. The only reason you're still standing is that I don't feel like breaking you right now, like a horse. Hangman said that MJF couldn't break him any more than he could break out of his Edgelord B-level movie incel villain routine, and he pointed out that Seabiscuit wins his race. On commentary, he's got a good point. He sure does. That's a great racehorse.
That's a great racehorse. Racehorse has been dead for 100 years, but yeah, it was a great one.
From the movie starring Tobey Maguire, I believe. A great racehorse, yeah. They went back and forth some more in the same vein of all the previous promos of this feud. So Hangman was like, I'm not going to be goaded into giving you a match. You can cash in or you can earn another shot some other way. And he kind of explicitly clarified what's been going on, which our friend Emmy had said, she was like, this is what I think is going on. And at the time I hadn't really thought about it, but it was right. Which is, he was like, MJF, you want to have this cash and shot in your back pocket so you can pull it out again immediately if you lose, which you will. MJF hit some of these beats like Hangman is the main character. Hangman did nothing wrong. Why does everyone treat you that way? Then he launched into some theological philosophizing. What'd you guys think about that?
He loves to do this. He loves to just get into a lot of God and devil stuff, you know?
Yeah, I'm so sick of the devil stuff that a lot of the stuff he was saying in that section, I was like, okay, we've heard this before. we've heard this song before. Next song.
Yeah. I feel like he's getting to a point of some he's already done all the ideas he has and there are no new ones where those are coming from is sometimes how it feels with him, where it's just like, you know, throw in some worksheet stuff, throw in like a tribute to old wrestling, like just redo something from old wrestling, like exactly the same. And then that's all he's got, you know? And it's like, just please try to think about your character as like a fictional character. It doesn't have to feel the same way as you do about everything. You don't have to reference things from twitter.com, you know, like,
I do completely agree with all of that, but also at the same time, when he was framing his thoughts where he was like, I guess if, what did he say? He was like, if, I guess if there can be evil on this earth, then perhaps God is not so, infallible. and somehow his delivery of it, to me, it was like he suddenly was like, and I'm TAing a section of intro to theology, and he was like looking out at everybody like, and what say you to that? And it was like, it's a promo. Like, no one can weigh in right now on the infallibility of God. don't you know we cannot answer? Like, Hangman, debate with me. He was in the, you know, he's like, we're having a Socratic seminar.
As you put it that way, it is very like, sir, this is a Wendy's. Like,
not the moment, but I kind of like that you're expressing an interest in, it's a, you know, it's a real topic of interest.
Yeah, I have a friend who ghostwrites some romance novels, and she said that she's always getting in there being like, so this character's main struggle is that he thinks, like, God hates him. And then the romance novel author is like, what are you doing? And she has to, like, back it out. And that was a little bit of the vibe.
Oh, my God. That's so funny. That's so funny. Okay, so then he calls Hangman a fraud, a weak-minded, depressed, alcoholic little boy, and he says, this is MJF. He says, unlike you, at least I'm real. And then Hangman does goad him into cashing in for Forbidden Door, which we can get to in a moment. Let's talk about I Am Real.
It was the craziest. I wish that Hangman had responded to that specifically, because it seemed like the most wild claim that he could possibly make, because every single thing about MJF is not real. Like, that is, like, he's always, even not from a wrestler doing art standpoint, literally from a character standpoint, he's so divorced for how he feels about anything, and he's so insecure and so, like, conscious of, like, you know, like, his looks and, like, his, you know, like, how wealthy he's coming off. Like, that's one of the character's hallmarks. So where the fuck does he get off saying that?
And I don't think, okay, well, so I think, was this, did Hangman in their pre-belt feud, did Hangman say to MJF, I'm real? I think he did.
I think he did, because he was saying something, if I'm remembering correctly, he said something along the lines of, like, he has a connection with the audience because they, like, under, like, they see him as a real person.
Yeah. So yeah. I think this was an attempt to, like, do a rhetorical flip and be like, the last time we met, like, you were saying that I wasn't real, but actually you are the one who's not real, except we didn't include any evidence. We didn't construct an argument that would support the rhetorical strategy. Yeah. So it just came off as very strange, especially because, to your point, Leah, like, yes, it's the whole character is like, he's not real, he's a construct. But also, I don't think the character respects realness. Like, I don't think that is a value for, I don't think that MJF would even bother to lie and be like, I am real, because being real is being weak. Like, it's important to have all of those defenses.
There's a world in which you could exploit a trait of MJF where a lot of his most successful feuds are about him sort of zeroing in on something on his opponent that he's desperately jealous of. And I think in some ways, like, his feud with Hangman is about, he's so jealous of Hangman's continued relationship with the audience that Hangman can do bad things and still receive unconditional love, which MJF never has. So there's a way in which you could say, like, you could exploit that and have, like, MJF be like, you know, be trying to, like, take that quality on himself, but, like, it just felt clumsily done, and, like, I don't actually think that's what they were doing. It's just what I would do.
Yeah. Well, and this too, it's like they didn't hang enough of a landscape on the fact that it was, like, a response to Hangman saying that before, because it was more like, that sounds really familiar, but, like, he wasn't like, you said you were real last time, but I'm actually the one that's real.
Yeah.
He said it as though it was the first time anyone was bringing it up, which made it, like, weird and confusing. Yeah. It was sort of interesting to watch them do this after they did that feud like 6 months ago that was pretty
very
good.
Effective.
Yeah.
Yeah. And be like, it is too soon to run this back because they've got nothing else to do with it. Like, we're back on, because I feel like he was calling Hangman, like, weak and alcoholic then too. And it's like, I feel like we're just hitting a lot of the same beats.
Well, I don't, what they've done on paper, like, if you had to sum up what they've done on paper in, like, a couple sentences, I don't think it's wrong. You know what I mean? Like, I think what they planned out is probably, if MJF had to be Hangman's first feud, which, I mean, I don't know what's going on. Like, that made that the choice. But, like, I think that the idea of MJF trying to trick Hangman into giving him something that he didn't want and Hangman Uno reverses, that's a good tack for them to take with this. But it's like every piece of, like, the supporting structure wasn't there, so it didn't work the way I would have expected. Because actually, when MJF decides he wants to hit a specific beat, he usually does hit it. Like, I often disagree with, like, what beats he thinks is important in his story, but, like, it's very rare that he doesn't hit the beat that he wants to hit, and Hangman never does. So it's just, it feels weird for them to see what they were trying to do and realize how, like, off the mark it hit.
Yeah, and it felt very just, like, badly paced, or, like, not enough story for the amount of time they've been giving it, because it's, like, it just feels like there's been a lot of filler.
Yeah. To me, doing this kind of structure where it's like somebody, you have MJF who wants to hold on to this trump card, and Hangman doesn't want to reward that and wants to, like, get him to give it up, basically, wants to get him to cash in and to get it off the table. Like, that could be really interesting, but it's kind of delicate. Like, it's kind of delicate to get them to do that in a way that's right for both of their characters. And it's, like, delicate to find the thing that, like, would make MJF slip. And I thought it was clumsy that the thing that made him slip was just saying, like, you're a coward repeatedly. And then he got so angry at that, that he, cashed in. And then I felt kind of like, I was like, do I not even like remember what MJF's character like usually is? Because in the moment I was like, I don't know why he gives a shit about that. Like, I don't know why he cares about being called a coward right now. I don't think that you've pushed the buttons that need to be pushed to make him like care about that and feel like it, you know, like it's an insult even.
Right. Right. Because I think the major buttons that, or the bruises that I think MJF have shown us sent over the past year, like since he lost the belt, I think his repeated soft spot is about being loved, you know, like that he gave his heart to Adam Cole, who broke it, you know, like he tried to reach out and make friends with the Hurt Syndicate, who dumped him. Like every time he's ever tried to make a human connection, the person rejected the Hurt Syndicate thing. Right. Mm. Like that's what I would have expected them to use, the coward stuff. Like if Hangman had said something like, no wonder the Hurt Syndicate dropped you. No one has ever loved you and no one ever would will.
Yeah.
And that's what made MJF reject. That would have felt better, I think.
Can you uh-huh. see like a really good promo at MJF that's just like you act like you don't care what anyone thinks about you, but all you ever do is try to buy people's love. Like, what are you going to do when you run out of money? Actually, it doesn't matter, because even when you have money, it doesn't work. Yeah. That's how unlovable you are.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
That'd be brutal.
That would
and it would make him lose it. And I feel like MJF like executed the losing it pretty well. Like I thought there were several moments in this where like his face acting was really good, but
she called him the greatest face actor of his generation.
Okay, I saw you put that in the schedule. And I was like, I said what? And then I was like, what was happening to me last night? And I went back and looked at my notes, and I did not. I just said he did some pretty good face acting.
I didn't even realize that you would think that you'd actually said it. I was like, she'll know this is a joke.
I mean, I was sleepy,
she said
but
he did some good face acting, and he did.
Yeah.
He did. So it was a shame that, because like what you just said is like, yeah, so much makes so much more sense with the character and with what's just happened. Because I feel like last week he did a decent job of making it, of showing that the Hurt Syndicate rejecting him really did like hurt his feelings pretty bad. So,
yeah, I just think it doesn't psychologically add up for kind of for either of them, but it's not really about Hangman. Like Hangman said some stuff that was true. Like, you know, Hangman said, I will not look past my faults. I will own up to them. I will not run and make excuses like you would. That was great. That was a good thing for Hangman to say. And
and someone in the crowd yelled, that's my champ, which I did love.
It was quite sweet. And it took me on a little journey where I was like, what's that making me think of? And then I was like, oh my God, it's These Days. It's that lyric at the end of These Days. Please don't confront me with my failures. I have not forgotten them, which is one of the most brutal lines of all time. Mm-hmm. And then I went to my favorite website. Hey guys, long aside. No, it'll be short. I went to my favorite website, secondhandsongs.net, to see who else has covered These Days, one of my favorite songs. And you know who, just the first thing I noticed when I was scrolling and I got a little...
Was it Adam Schlesinger?
It was Fountains of Wayne. It was Fountains of Wayne on Out of Plates. Out of State Plates. Whatever the album was. Anyway.
Well, I'll be listening to that as soon as...
It's a sweet little cover. It's good. Anyway. So, yeah. So, I think Hangman was fine... I don't know. This just hasn't been, it hasn't added up for either of them, which is kind of frustrating.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Especially when they did do a really good job the last time, but it's like, it's too soon, I think. And
yeah. Not enough has changed, and which it feels like it's like Hangman has won the belt. So it's kind of like, should that be enough? I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess not.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's like Hangman is on a redemption. Like if the previous feud was a little bit more about Hangman being a failure, he could have come into this being like, no, I know who I am. I'm steady on my feet. And if MJF came into it like more a little bit, obviously knocked off balance by the Hurt Syndicate, then you could say things have changed because the pieces are there. But it's like they didn't quite do that.
This has been an interesting conversation because made me realize how much material has been left on the table and didn't get used in this. Like, to not bring up anything about MJF's previous reign, not that anybody wants to be reminded of it, but, like, you know, it's like, if you want to have a through line with the character, like, you can't really let it lie. You have to use it. To not use the Hurt Syndicate stuff at all is kind of wild.
Well, to not use it, it's like, what did we do it for? What did we do? What did we do?
It's the one thing we'll never know.
Well, it does feel like they're trying to, like, retcon it and just pretend it didn't happen, but it would be better to at least, like, bring some good out of all that wasted time, you know?
Take a page out of the Jon Moxley cult's Death Riders book and just say, you know what? We are going to land the plane that everybody's thinking on. We're just going to land the plane. Let's not die.
Yeah. It's like, just because the whole plane ride was bad doesn't mean you can't land the plane, you know?
Let's land the plane. I don't know. It's interesting. They also closed the show. MJF attacked Hangman in the parking lot and was screaming, show me that cowboy shit. And he divested his velvet blazer, and he was just dressed all in black, like a little Johnny Cash. And I actually did think that was a good look. I liked it. But he got dust all over it, and that was a little funny.
It was kind of funny afterwards when he had those dust spots. You were like, oh. Shows everything.
So you got to be, you got to be so careful. It's not really a good cowboy outfit. Anything else you want to say about Hangman and MJF before we move on?
Better. Got it.
I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed. The Bucks and the Callis family, so that was Josh Alexander and Kyle Fletcher, fought Brody King, Hologram Ishii, and Hiromu Takahashi on Dynamite. Did I name? Yeah, I named four men. I guess
that. Where was Trent Beretta?
That's the thing we don't know. That's the thing we don't know.
Repulsive.
Greg, if you popped your titty again.
Do his titties ever stay on?
Greg.
I saw someone in one of our Discords was like, every time I see Josh Alexander, I think you should be Greg. And I was like, that's right.
Yeah. That's correct. Okay, so. Don Callis cut a promo on Collision where, for some reason, he told New Japan to send their best for Kyle Fletcher, and they sent Hiromu. I think that's what happened, and I think that's why he was in attendance.
Which, if I understand New Japan correctly, I think Hiromu is their Kyle O'Reilly, which is so funny.
Okay, I'd love someone to tell me who the Kyle O'Reilly of each promotion is. Like, I think that would be helpful information for me. Like, who's the Kyle O'Reilly of NXT? Who's
the
Kyle O'Reilly of Raw?
This sounds like an assignment for the Kiss Boys. Can you guys just put together a little guide? We want, like, everyone in the G1 and just tell us who their equivalent at AEW is.
Yeah. And you know they'll tell us based on, like, wrestling style not personality.
That's such a good point, Anne. No, we don't want to hear about the wrestling unless the wrestling is integral to the personality somehow. Okay? Right. This is based on, like, who's the stone cold freak cannibal? Like, who's the funniest little rat boy on the roster? That's what we want to know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's an action item for the Kiss Boys.
Take that out as a follow-up, boys.
Okay, so the Young Bucks had their entrance for the match. I think, like, some weird music started, some fire started, and then everything stopped. And then we got an announcement. Sorry, everyone, we do not have music for the Young Bucks tonight. And they came out looking mad. And then the stuff went up on the video screens, and it said Slick Nick and Mr. Instant Replay. I'm actually on Zoom right now getting a fireworks display that the Young Bucks would have loved to get. They would have loved to get that.
Kind of humiliating for them that you got it, and they did not. Yeah.
Well, I helped found this podcast. It's really similar to helping found AEW.
Oh my God, we are founding fathers.
Oh,
we got
some confetti, We're founding mothers, so please. So they were wearing these little orange vests, which I loved, actually. Mm-hmm. And they were coming out to the ring, and commentary got in this big discussion about how they looked in orange, basically. With Taz, I guess, who does love orange, immediately being like, I love the Young Bucks. I've actually always loved the Young Bucks. We have jobs because of them. I respect them. I think they look wonderful in orange, one of the best colors. Tony Schiavone says, I've had an orange bracelet on all day and you hammered on me all day about it. About a bracelet.
I think it was because he always like loves the Bucks, but he usually yells at people who wear orange because it's his color. So he was flipping that way where he was like, actually, it's fun that they're wearing orange because they're my friends, and of course I love them. And so Tony was like, why did I get in trouble for wearing orange? It's like, well,
I've never noticed that bit, but I loved imagining Tony Schiavone's bracelet, and I immediately Googled orange gemstone bracelets and then was making up a little story in my head where I'm like, I wonder what Nigel got him this beautiful carnelian bracelet.
It would have been nice if that was like an anniversary, like 50th anniversary is orange gemstone.
Mm. Oh, yeah, I didn't check the anniversary list.
I don't think it's on there, but it would have been fun if it was.
Probably be pretty late in the game. That's not going to be one of the earlier ones.
It's like, wow, I didn't know they've been married for 67 years.
Okay, so
you should say the Fox News pundit thing.
Oh, yeah. I did say that Taz's vibe was like when a Fox News pundit has to do a really weird about face on something they usually hate because Donald Trump just decided he loved it. And his energy was just like, I've always said this. I've actually always said this. We've all always said this. I thought this was a really fun match. Any highlights you want to bring up?
They got so mad at Justin Roberts for the entrance, and then they bullied him into the corner of the ring, and then they super kicked him during the match, which was delightful. Good for you, Justin Roberts. Take that bump.
It was awesome. I also, again, completely misinterpreted something and got really excited because what happened was Tony, in the middle of the match, was like, Tony Schiavone was like, Tony Khan has fined the Young Bucks for kicking Justin Roberts, and they will now be announcing the rest of the show. And I got so fucking excited.
That explains everything.
That is so cool. I'm very excited for this. But what he was saying is, I will be announcing the rest of the show. And I was like, fuck, I don't care about that.
I love that neither of us asked you about this, but it's clear in this moment that both of us were like, she's really happy about that.
Yeah.
For some reason.
What did I miss that we're so excited about?
I was really amped at the idea of the Bucks being forced into indentured servants as like part of the production crew, and they like very sullenly would have to announce the rest of the show. That would have been so funny.
That would have been
really
amazing.
Or they should do something where it's like, and now the Young Bucks will have to take down the ring at the end of the show, and then the overrun, instead of being a match I don't care about, was just us watching the Young Bucks like sweep up confetti.
What the fuck? We need our pumps.
Free idea.
Oh my
we
god.
We do need our pumps.
I just got so excited at the idea of like a fight between LFI and ops, and security comes running out, and the Bucks are one of the security.
But like very like reluctant, like very like a child being forced to clean up their room energy.
Or it's like they're security and they have to like, they're supposed to like sweep up after. So they're coming out in their security, ill-fitting security uniforms, and they already have the broom with them. They're just like, well, we'll just stay out here after because I guess we have to do every damn job around here now.
If the security uniforms were way too big for them, because usually it's those really huge guys. Little Young Bucks.
God, that's comedy. This is funny because it's like, I think they should be getting, like, don't punish them by taking their money anymore. Punish them with stuff like this, number one. But then also, I do think we need to get to the point where people are, because I'm kind of assuming now that they are canonically penniless.
Yeah.
I think that people should be fucking with them by being like, I'll give you $10 if you do X demeaning thing. And they're both like, we would never do that. And then the next week it's like, well, it's Dire Straits. We have no, like, fine.
Matt's like, so mama needs a coffee though. I need Starbucks. So
I haven't had Starbucks in weeks. those are two huge ideas. Let's get those out there. What's the other thing I was going to say here? Oh, so anyway, Hiromu Takahashi pinned Josh Alexander for the win. Josh Alexander, this was the most, I would usually say it happily, but I hate Josh Alexander, sorry. It was the most undignified pin I've ever seen. He just kept his legs like bent up in the air. I just thought, like, pull yourself together. I know you're the pin pig, but like, have some dignity. Respect yourself.
I feel like we've seen more undignified pins in the last 6 months than like the whole rest of our time. There's just been a lot of like butt up pins.
And I guess technically, like, of course I support it. Like, I don't, like, it is like at the end of the day, like, don't respect yourself. Like, do look funny. But when it's Josh Alexander, I'm going to yell at him a little, you know?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, from someone else, it's hilarious. And from Josh Alexander, it is like, pull yourself together.
Yeah.
Come
yeah.
on, man.
Now, this is another one of my Broke Young Bucks ideas, because they teamed up with the Callis family and they have this loose affiliation. And as we discussed last week, Don Callis, of course, owns the Little Men Mansion and is running a school for boys. And click, 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 things are moving in my head. I'm like, who is somebody else who was really rich but then suddenly seemed penniless and then they had to live in an attic and do the chores in the rich girl's house? Could it be a little princess? And we have this rich man's house. Are the Young Bucks a little princessing in Don Callis's mansion? Are they being allowed to stay there in a garret? Is a monkey coming to visit them in the attic?
Yeah. I want to see that. I want to see the Young Bucks in their attic trying to make the best of it and have like a little tea party in the corner and being like, it's fine. In our imagination, we're still rich.
We're princes, really. Every boy is a prince who believes in himself. I know, it's full Cinderella. Maybe at the end of this, they'll get to go to a ball.
They're shivering on the hearth, and they have only the little coals to keep them warm, and Don Callis had them up scrubbing the floor all night long.
And, like, his boys are sitting around the dining room table, and, like, the Young Bucks try to take a seat, in the and Don Callis is like, those seats are only for family.
Now, if they're Cinderella, the prince would be there. They have to get a new middleman.
They have to get a new
middleman. Thing going on with them is it's like, guys, I know you love Okada, but he is not being good to you right now.
No.
He's not the man. He is not the man you need right now.
No.
He's not a protector.
No.
I don't think he's even noticed that you haven't had Starbucks.
He's definitely a fair weather middleman. Where he's like, oh, yeah, when things are going well, I love the Young Bucks. And when things are going bad, I simply don't see it.
He's the rare middleman who kind of has the upper hand in the situation.
Yeah. We've never seen it before. Like, never seen it before. I don't think it is fascinating. I'd love to see the Young Bucks responding to it a little bit, actually.
Yeah. Right.
It's like, you can't be enjoying this. He's ignoring you.
Yeah.
So maybe they go to the ball in order to meet a new middleman, but then they leave and they leave their trunks behind.
The prince is just wandering around trying to find the man who can fit these trunks.
Oh my God, they have shoes though. They have special designated shoes that they can leave behind.
A new sexy spin on the story. And
in the Grimm's fairy tale version, the stepsisters like cut off their heels and stuff to fit into them. So like, you got people out there trimming their butts to fit into those trunks.
Tony's shrieking. No, my butts. Please, God, no. So our parent company, Skims, is gonna hate this. Okay, well, this has really gone someplace. Anything else to say about any of that?
I don't think I can top any of that.
No, I don't think so either. Let's quick check in on Max Caster. Max Caster Max Caster?
You've heard of him.
Max Caster.
Best wrestler alive.
He had another backstage interview and another match on Collision. In the backstage interview, seeming almost dignified.
He did. It was like a quiet dignity. Where he was like, I actually didn't need help the whole time. I could have handled it.
It was a quiet dignity, the way you would say about like so you look at someone and you're like, how cold are you? Is your brain like freezing? Like, can you function right now? He was like, it's so great that I'm the best wrestler alive, and I successfully defeated Roosh, and that went really well for me. And Jet Speed, I had it under control. So, you know, appreciate it, but next time there's simply no need to come save me. I'm doing amazing. So he goes out. He has another five minutes on the clock. Shibata comes out, fights him, beats him. Normal. Shibata reaches down to offer him the hand of respect.
But it's like, what has that man ever done to deserve that, Shibata?
My eyes were bugging out of my head. I'm like, yeah, he's like a perfect little meow meow, obviously. Obviously, he's pathetic and he's getting baby-faced. I didn't think that you would have known it, though. I assumed he was still very annoying backstage. Shibata offers him the hand. Max Caster takes the hand. They're standing there, their faces in the ring together, I guess. And LFI comes out to attack them again. LFI's beating them up. Jet Speed runs out to save him again.
I think Jet Speed is addicted to saving people.
No one respects Max Caster. You can say, he can say something right to your face, and
yeah,
no one takes him seriously.
Jet Speed's like, he does need us, though. He does.
Do you think Jet Speed have like a crush on Max Caster?
Wow, I'm interested. They're like, we saw you from across the bar.
We liked your vibe.
But I think they might not even know that's what's happening, because they don't like, really seem like they've done that before. You know?
No, they're like, I'm strangely drawn to him. I don't know what I want, but
they're just talking about him a lot together as a couple. They're just like, I don't know, there's something, you know. It's like, he says he can do it on his own, but I just think he needs somebody. I think he needs somebody.
What do you think his workout routine is? Because his body, it really looks great. And
really do be banging.
I just can't stop thinking about it, but just workout routine-wise, pretty much.
He's got a match next week. We should hang out nearby just to, like, keep an eye on him.
Let's just keep an eye on him. I know he thinks he can handle it on his own, but let's just keep an eye on him.
Let's just keep an eye.
The other alternative, but it could be both, is that Hangman truly is the best locker room leader of all time. Like, they went to him. They went to his dressing room, and they were like, listen, we saved this guy last week, and he said he doesn't want us to save him anymore, so we just want to double-check with you. Like, so then it's like, that's not an if-you-see-something-do-something situation anymore, because he literally said, like, don't do something. And Hangman's like, search your hearts. Search your hearts, you know? Maybe it's like he may feel ashamed that he needs help, but there's nothing shameful about needing help.
I love that. Like, that's especially, so true. Especially if, like, they asked it in a weird kind of confused way, and Hangman was just kind of like he didn't know they were talking about Max Caster, and he was just like, well, like, a lot of, like, people don't always know what they need, you know? You know, people sometimes they say they don't want things, but they do want them, because Hangman's thinking about himself. And it's not until later when somebody's like, yeah, Jet Speed saved Max Caster again. He's like, oh, shit, is that what they were talking about? No, they didn't have to save him. Fuck.
No. Oh, okay, yeah. I'll go talk to him, you know. But then he goes to their dressing room, and they're just, like, in there just being like, oh, he just seems lonely. He just overhears them, like, he seems lonely. He seems like you need – he's like, okay, I'm not getting involved in this anymore. Whatever's going on there is your business. I do love the idea that he's just like, you know, like insisting that you don't need help when you could really use it. That's a huge part of toxic masculinity.
Yeah.
And that's what we're breaking down in this locker room. That's what we're not doing anymore.
I just thought of something so funny. Max Caster is Jet Speed's middleman.
Wow.
Yes.
Max Caster, this could be huge for you. And you seem like somebody who's really good at ruining stuff.
Yeah,
that's good for you, you know?
Number one talent. And think how upset Anthony Bowens would be to see you moving on with else, with two other men.
With two handsome, fabulous wrestlers? With two amazing wrestlers?
Mm-hmm. Billy Gunn's going to be like, we can't talk about this anymore. And Anthony Bowens is like, and another thing.
I think, did Anthony Bowens fight Billy Gunn, or is he planning to?
I think he's heel turning on Billy Gunn, but I don't think it's happened.
Maybe it hasn't happened yet.
He's yelled at him.
That's going to be rough when he's completely single and Max Caster has Jet Speed. against all odds.
Yeah. And it's like, and everyone's like, wow, Max Caster really upgraded from Anthony Bowens and Billy Gunn, who were really dragging him down.
Honestly, I'm now rooting for this trio.
I know.
I love
kind
it.
Of like, I think they could be good for each other.
Yeah.
I'm going to be kind of like the most disappointed I've been in years if they never interact again after this.
Yeah.
Which feels very possible because it was really confusing that it happened 2 weeks in a row. Like, it didn't feel like, oh, yeah, this has been set up by the shows. It felt like, wow, again? Okay. Maybe you just misread. Maybe you read last week's call sheet tonight and now you accidentally did it again. No? For real?
This is a real, like, you know, you're not supposed to fantasy... You can fantasy book, but not fantasy believe. And it's like, this is maybe the weirdest thing anyone could fantasy believe, but I am desperate for it.
I think it's what Max Caster needs.
Yeah. I think it'd be a great progression for the character. And I think it'd be fun for Jetspeed, too, to have a little guy ruining things
for
them.
Well, it's like everything's gone so normal for them that it's like, it's kind of like they just had like the classic like young adult novel experience of like adopting like a weird dog or like Anne of Shirley, where they're just sort of like, our normal life has been turned upside down.
Max Caster as Anne Shirley. Yeah,
it sent me to the moon. Yeah. I mean, it's not wrong. He would dye his hair green, you know?
Absolutely.
Constantly speedballs being like, oh, how do you get in these great specs?
I do also, I'd love to see everyone else backstage. Like, just moments where it's, like, Jetspeed are coming through with Max Caster and, like, basically being, like, and this is our new boyfriend and we're just really, really happy. You know, we didn't expect it, but love comes when it comes. And, like, the second they're off stage, everybody's just like, what the fuck? You couldn't pay me. You couldn't
pay me. Having the smuggest face on earth.
Like, just walking around with his two boys at his arm. Oh. Looking like the cat who ate the canary.
Oh my gosh. Well, but also with a certain quiet dignity.
Renee, I didn't need Jetspeed, but I do want them.
Renee, I think actually Jetspeed need me.
The face that Renee would make at either of those sentences, just even in imagination.
Oh, incredible. Man. Fuck, I want all of this. Okay. Well, congratulations on being respected and lusted after, Max Caster. John Moxley cut a little promo outside the Dynamite venue this week saying, Darby Allin, whatever you think is happening at Forbidden Door is not happening. I thought a match, and but after he said it, I felt less certain. It just...
What did Darby think was going to happen?
There was something so open-ended about the phrase. As I've said here, so he doesn't want to take a sewer boat to Darby's candlelit opera underworld. thank you to Bookworm on Tumblr, who messaged us and said, of course, Marina would be John Moxley's Raul in this scenario. You're so fucking right. I'm embarrassed that we didn't say it. You're so fucking right. And I wish I could watch them perform a duet. I truly do. Mox went on inside. He fought Kevin Knight. And yeah, these quotes are all insane. He grinded on Knight.
You have to read that whole paragraph.
Yeah.
I guess this is from AEW.com. Okay. We don't know what's happening over there. It's like, we don't know if they're definitely using AI for some stuff, but then also I think they might've hired Manolo.
This paragraph, I was like, this paragraph itself is an arguing against AI. I didn't think about them hiring Manolo, but I am like, that could be right.
I also thought they could have told AI, like, we want a really sprightly tone. I don't
know. Oh my God. What if they trained the AI exclusively on Manolo?
They're like, this is what an AI recap should look like. And the AI was like, I mean, I guess.
Internalized, immediately onboarded. That's what happened. They trained it on Cage Side Seats recaps. Okay. So the recap says, with momentum clearly in Mox's favor, he grinded down Knight and slowed down the pace significantly, even going as far as to bite one half of Jetspeed. Skyline chili, this was not.
Dot, dot, dot.
Mox. Oh, no, there was a little bit but yeah. But then it did go on to say, Mox sunk in a deep choke for the win.
It's crazy.
I'm never that confident when I read these. Like, I'm just like, maybe that's what everybody's saying. Like, maybe that's the normalest way to say it. He sunk in a deep choke. That's the technical term. I don't sunk in a deep choke. Well, okay.
Guys, I like chili, but I'm not like a huge chili person. Would you often say that you bite chili?
No.
Not even Skyline chili. It's so wet. No.
It's so wet. Imagine being like, boy, I'm going to bite you like chili.
That would really just mean like biting a spoon, pretty much. I
think so.
Yeah.
Foolish. I don't know. I don't know what's happening here. Anyway. So he wins. Mox wins, and then Speedball comes out to try and save Kevin Knight. It was a very fun match. I had a good time. He comes out to try and save Kevin Knight, and then he immediately gets attacked. But then Darby comes out with his skateboard, and he's dragging a big empty body bag behind him, which was a little bit of like a Peanuts comic look. Like very he was true. Carrying his blankie around.
He did. It did.
And he comes into the ring and he skateboards Yuta, and then he shoves Yuta in the body bag and he zips it up. And Yuta, I don't know if you can give someone a Mommy's Little Ham award for a moment when you couldn't see their face. But the fact that he was flipping and flopping in that body bag like some kind of agitated worm should earn him something.
It was a real, you're fishing, you pull that fish into the boat, and it's just losing it at the bottom of the boat.
Dan. He was fighting Darby just enough getting into it that Darby had this exasperated look on his face, like when you're trying to put a duvet in the duvet cover, and you're just like, where is the end? I keep fucking do this. I loved it. I loved every part of this. The energy of Darby putting Yuta in the bag, Yuta scrambling around inside the bag, then Claudio appearing, Claudio taking Yuta out of the bag, then them putting Darby in the bag. I was like, I could have watched everybody get to turn in the bag for hours.
It did kind of feel like by the time Darby was in there and he was getting spun around on Claudio's shoulders, it was like, this might be a treat. I might have misinterpreted this whole section, and like the point is to get put in the bag. It's like, it's my turn to go in the bag. Which actually, I do think that if confronted with a body bag, I probably would be like, let me just get in there. Let me just see what it's like.
Yeah.
So there's this whole section that I somehow missed most of this. So when I was watching it back, I was like, wow, a lot happened. So Darby gets spun around on Claudio's shoulders and slammed under the ring in the body bag. And then they take him out of the body bag again. And they're setting up a little chair situation. They're going to snap his old neck. But then luckily, someone comes up and yanks Claudio out of the ring. I think Claudio, maybe Yuta, somebody yanks somebody else out of the ring. And who could it be? It's Ospreay. Oh, it's a little sweet, mommy's little sweetie baby, Will Ospreay. And he's really, he has so much energy because he hasn't been here in weeks. And he gets in the ring and he drives all the bad guys away. And he hops on the mic and he says something that I forget that ends with him saying, John Moxley, we're going to have a lights out steel cage match at Forbidden Door. And Mox and his Death Riders are getting out of there. And then Ospreay and Darby are looking at each other. And I thought, they must have met before. Have I seen it? Have I seen them meet before? Surely.
I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't know. But they kind of sized each other up. And I think Will Ospreay's vibe a little bit was like, so you're my best friend's best friend. So you're my competition. But then they fist bumped or something. Darby was like, yeah, we're all good. And they fist bumped. Did we miss anything that happened in that match that we have to talk about before anything else?
Oh, they fought each other.
God damn it. This is going to be Darby embarrassing, but
I know people were probably listening being like, you idiots, you loved that match. Well, not for us. Well,
sure. I'm supposed to remember every match that I loved that had Darby or Will Ospreay in it. Like, grow up. I have a life. I have Fountains of Wayne to listen to. Okay. So then later in the show, we get a backstage interview with Renee and Ospreay. And Ospreay explains, Renee's like, wow, lights out steel cage match. That's so fun. What's up? And Ospreay's like, well, Renee, I made the match without Tony's blessing. And he had no knowledge of what was going to take place. So I had to go back. I had to go back, talk to him. And naturally, he was thrilled about the idea of a lights out steel cage match. But I myself thought it's not Forbidden Dory enough. So I called up my old boss. And then he did this whole reenactment of the conversation that was like, this is deranged. I love it. It's crazy. Crazy little conversation.
His energy was like he was so revved up by being on TV again. Like he just was at home, like vibrating with energy in the 3 weeks he was gone.
It was the same energy as when Nick Jackson came back after that long break and like took the Diet Coke, like where it was just like, oh, you didn't like being home at all. And
no.
Will Ospreay's like, I was home. I didn't take any flights anywhere. I didn't do anything. It was terrible.
Am I talking really fast? I feel like I'm talking really fast.
The fact that he said, I made a match without Tony's blessing was like, I just went to another world immediately. I was like, all right, we're in Georgette Heyer's Regency world immediately. you didn't go talk to Mama before you proposed marriage. That's not done. That's simply not done.
Osprey's like, I'm taking the Death Riders to Greta Green and no one can stop me.
okay, so, but anyway, so he was like, and so Tanahashi's coming to be in the match. It was cool, but also scary that I was immediately like, oh, he can't do that, his knees.
His knees, I know, seriously.
Tanahashi, I don't think so.
Oh, please, not Tanahashi.
Not the knees.
After the G1.
It's so humiliating to have learned things.
I know. The Social Suplex Network has been so good to us in many ways, but the fact that we now regularly are around people that know way more than us, it accidentally like osmosed some of that.
Mm-hmm. In some ways, it broke us. You know, we're not the women we were.
No.
We shouldn't know who Tanahashi is.
No, we should, except for his MILF outfits.
We should know his sexy apron MILF shots.
God, mm-hmm. We should.
And has he done any
like,
of those recently?
I don't know. No one's been updating me on his MILF shots. They just update me on his knees and his performance in the G1.
That's the last thing I want to hear about. Do you think that maybe Forbidden Door? The fun of Forbidden Door is that wrestlers come from around the world, from all promotions, to have a really amazing match of a lifetime. What if to commemorate it, we had a sexy calendar?
We should have a sexy calendar.
What if we had a sexy Forbidden Door calendar? Bodies of the world.
Please. That's all I want.
Where they're like naked except for like the fabric. They're draping around themselves. Yeah.
So that's yet another free idea.
And I mean, with the prices of pro wrestling merch, you could charge like $50 for that calendar.
I'd probably buy it. I worry that I would pay $100.
I know. Worry,
and it's like, they're just like, you'll never see, because there's got to be one big group shot where they're all, I don't know what the fuck they're doing, but there's got to be a big group shot. And it's like, you'll never see all these men almost naked in one picture again. And it's like, you're right. I probably won't. It's true. Have to purchase the calendar.
That's what makes me infuriated is that if they at all marketed to women in any of like the things that they're selling, they could make so much money. If they took 1/10 of the budget that they use for black t-shirts with red littering.
Jesus Christ.
I know.
And used it towards women.
It's like, we're basically negotiating against ourselves here. Because on some level, I'm like, well, don't make the merch because I'm having no by August. Like, I don't need to be buying a $100, like, nearly nude wrestling rugby calendar. You know, it's like, that's not a good idea for me. So it's like, I'm on both sides of the table. I'm playing the black pieces and the white pieces.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I'm losing either way, Tony. But yet I somehow win because you still refuse to make the merch. I don't even think any of that made sense. I'm so head up. I don't know why that's how I put it. I'm running around the chess set.
I love the idea of you running around the chess set, making both sides lose.
And like screaming, oh God, now I'm losing again. Like you're never on the winning side, just always the losing side.
They're both in checkmate. How did that happen?
I don't know what. Frankly, I don't really know what I described. All I'm saying is like, don't even make this merch, Tony, but like, it's crazy that you're not, you know?
Yeah.
You're doing me a favor by not making it, but I'm doing you a favor by telling you that you should.
I feel like literally if they put the tiniest amount of effort into marketing to women, like not just for selling merch, but for getting them to watch the product, like you could have a lot of success because you could raise your percents pretty high because the numbers are pretty low.
Yeah.
Yeah. So... Well, and do with that what you will, which is nothing. No one will ever do anything with it. Because the more women who are interested, the uncooler it is to men. So
that's unfortunately true.
Ain't that the way. Renee did then check in. She was like, and Will, the reason you haven't been around for a while is because of your herniated discs. So how are you feeling health-wise? I think Will Ospreay, I guess, got in touch with his theater roots or like he's been, I don't know, a great stillness fell over him and he'd been so excited. And then he said, I'm fine. I'm fine. Would you mind telling your husband? He's so polite. Would you mind telling your husband that I'd love a chat next week in Glasgow? Thank you so much, my love. I'm going to go try and find my hat. I lost my hat. My hat went flying. I'm not sure. To be perfectly frank, I am not sure what I'm supposed to think about Will Ospreay's health in this moment.
No.
But I kind of thought that he was tapping into something. I thought, there's a pathos here. I'm not sure what it means, but it compels me.
Like everything about Ospreay.
Compels me.
He gets every week he gets on camera and he says, hey girls, here's a cloud. What do you think?
Really? You want to see another cloud?
What did you make that one for? Does it make rain or is it low to the earth or high to the earth? He says, looks like a moon. Here's another one. You like this one? He said, yeah, that one looks kind of like a, here's another one. Okay. Thank you. Thank you for all your clouds. I can barely keep up. He's really a special boy. I love him. I loved seeing him.
I can't believe we existed so long without him.
I know. Mm. He feels like he's always been here and he's always been unfathomable. And then the other thing going on here is that, he'd said, like, this match is going to be, like, me, Darby Allin, a couple more people we need to confirm, and Tanahashi. And I wasn't even really thinking, because obviously Swerve Okada is going to be at Forbidden Door, but I was like, I guess I'll get Swerve in there, and that'll be fun, because Swerve and Darby are friends, and Swerve and Ospreay are friends, so we get to see some dynamics, and that'll be fun, because Ospreay is a golden retriever, and they're both cats, so it's fun to see a dog with two cats.
Yeah.
That's perfect. But then, of course, later in the show, it's just announced via graphic that the other two men are Kenny and Ibushi.
Wild.
Why? Go, Leah.
No, I was just like, okay. Like,
okay. Yeah.
Thank you for joining us, Kenny.
Kenny's like, I didn't. They just put my, picture there to be clear. I didn't join you and I won't be joining you.
That's how Kenny found out about that match too, is that he saw the graphic and was like, I'm what?
That feels.
Kenny's in his last semester of college, and his professors haven't seen him all year.
No. He's dodging emails from his thesis advisors. Thesis advisor is like, I'm really going to need that senior thesis from you. I'm going to need a draft, like, now to know that you're on track for graduation. Kenny's like, none of your business if I'm on track for graduation.
He shows up once in a while on test days, never for the lecture.
I'm concerned about him. I'll say that. I'm concerned about his mental health, his physical health. I'd love to hear about, you know, what's happening with you.
It's crazy. I don't understand any of it, and I'm not real thrilled with him in general. So
haven't seen him that much.
No.
No.
And when he turns up again, he's not coming to lectures, so...
No.
Like, I feel like nothing he's done in a long time has been his best effort. And I hate to be mean to Kenny because I love Kenny.
I do think that's a little unfair because the Shih Tzus was some of his best work. But then maybe the reason he's not doing his best work. Everyone was so mean to him about it. He's just like, sorry, you didn't like the fucking funniest promo of all time? Well, then I guess you don't like me.
Say goodbye to me.
He puts up his shirt. It's just like one Young Buck on it.
But I was so excited to have him back, and then it's kind of been nothing except for the one Dookie promo.
The Dookie promo. Oh God, it was such a good one though.
It was. The
time he was up the pole with Osprey, that was
And he was afraid of height. He said, I gotta go because I'm afraid of heights.
And he made friends with Osprey in 5 minutes. People are also mad about that. Actually, he's getting panned. All his good stuff was getting panned, so maybe he is just mad.
Yeah, he's just like, you don't deserve me. You don't deserve me. I'm interested. If he wants to come to work, if he wants to come to the show, I'm interested to see him interact with Osprey again now that Osprey has... Yeah. A real best friend who loves him. Like, I'd love to just see what the vibe is with Kenny. But
maybe Kenny will be a little jealous now seeing that Osprey has all these friends and Kenny.
It would be so funny if Kenny's vibe was like, it's Osprey though. I could get him back if I wanted him. I could get him back anytime I wanted him.
That would be, honestly, that would probably be some of like the most... characterization Kenny's brought to the table in a while. If suddenly he was just like, I'm gonna get him back.
I want to make him really jealous.
I'm really jealous.
If he like worked hard and got him back and it worked, and then 2 weeks later he was like, yeah, and like dumped him again.
That's, you know what, that would be a great 3 weeks for me. I'd probably let Kenny coast on that for a while. If he's looking for an easy win. Mm-hmm. Mox also had a backstage segment later where Alicia Toot was like, what do you think about the other team getting Tanahashi? Mox said, they got Tanahashi, Hiroshi Tanahashi? And then he made a series of faces and then said, I think, well, shit, to himself. And then stuck his tongue out in delight. He looked...
In the screenshot, he looks horned up.
I don't know if you can give someone the mommy's little ham for the 10 seconds that he did this reaction, but I personally would. Yeah. That's how good it was for me.
Yeah.
He did look like he had just sprung an erection in a pretty big way.
Tanahashi, you say.
Which is funny because I guess the segment, because then he goes to the extras dressing room, opens the door. It's a little cinder block cell where men are doing workouts. Windowless cell. Men are doing workouts. Really,
they found the bleakest looking backstage area that I have ever seen.
It was great. And then the camera turns and the Young Bucks are in there, which is perfect.
So just perfect. Sitting in these little folding chairs looking dejected.
I would, too. If I'm in there, men are working out, getting sweaty. There's no windows. You know it smells rank. You know it smells really bad in there. And then he and Mox, who isn't scared of a little smell, he goes in there to chit-chat with the Young Bucks. So I felt like the whole segment was supposed to communicate. He's like, all right, well, we better really get some people in this match because it's going to be rough for us. But what he'd communicated was, I'm fucking rock hard for this. I wish I were the only man in there. And Tanahashi would just have his way with me. So it was some mixed messages from John Moxley, a man who I would say is doing the greatest work of his year right now.
I know. During his match, like, commentary was, like, basically said something to the effect of, like, oh, Mox is on, like, his worst losing streak yet. Like, he's really downward spiraling and stuff. But Mox's energy is not really communicating that, which is, like, not a criticism because I love everything he's doing. Yeah. But it's so funny.
I wouldn't have him change a thing, but I agree. Doesn't fully add up. Don't change a thing. Do not do anything different.
I know. I'm just so pleasantly entertained by everything. Like, he just seems like he's so relaxed. And he's just like, hey, work up fun again. I'm just here to have fun. We're all having fun.
It like, really feels like he's like, boy, that match with Hangman. Like, I reached such a climax that I am going to be in a good mood for months.
He's loose. He's smoking a cigarette and sitting up in bed being like, should we order delivery?
He's like, you know what fucking sucks? Having everyone yell at you all year because you're holding a stupid bitch because you put your stupid belt in a briefcase. Fuck off. Everyone yells at you all year. Fuck off. You know what's great when they stop yelling at you because you don't have that fucking belt anymore. Feels fucking free. Can't catch me now. I cannot believe this screenshot. But what his tongue was doing so was... funny. It was... Oh.
What you've described it doing to you is buttering your brain.
Yeah. Yeah, because of, like, when you butter the cat. You butter the cat.
Which is a reference I get, but nobody else will.
Yeah, well, you brought it to the table. Okay, I didn't say it out loud. I put it in a document that only you two read. So. I think I'm in the right here. It did butter my brain. You just want to watch it over and over again. Feels so good. Just scratch it. Yes, yeah, scratch, scratch, scratch at your little brain.
Yeah.
When he stuck that tongue out. Well, shit. If he was trying to do I'm Scared, he did not. Swerve also had another live segment, which was an on-ramp interview with Renee. He looked really, so big.
Oh, my God. He looked so good.
It's kind of unreal. It was pretty crazy. And, I was looking at him being like, God, you're so handsome. You're so crazy handsome. Then I got distracted because Renee was like, and one thing I've heard about you is that you're injured. And I said, what the fuck do you mean? And Swerve said, basically, he's just like, oh, Renee, don't worry about that. Men get injured and then they're just injured, but you don't need to know about it. Men are just injured. I was like, everyone needs to calm. The number of men I have cruising through this show every week being like, I'm about to die, but don't you worry about that. I'm about to jump off a cage for you.
I know. I was so maybe worried. I was like, listen, Swerve, Okada kind of needs a good match because everybody's really mad at him.
Yeah. But
not at your expense. Please don't blow out your knee to save Okada.
I keep being like, some of these guys don't have to be at Forbidden Door if they're going to die.
Yeah.
If they're about to die. And Tony's like, it's a pretty intense schedule, so everyone's got to really just be giving the team their best right now. Everyone's really got to keep giving the team everything they got, because we've got quite a few pay-per-views.
We could just cancel a pay-per-view. We could just cancel that little October pay-per-view.
We could cancel any of these. We could cancel any pay-per-view.
Yeah, if
that's what we need to heal the whole roster up.
Mm. Yeah, why don't we just take a 3-month break and just let everybody rest up
Everyone heal up.
And no TV show has ever managed to do that before. Three-month break,
I know.
TV's really supposed to be every week. You know,
we could call it, like, the off-season, like the season that's not on, something like that.
Can I tell you guys something I read today? I was Googling, like, fun miniseries to watch, and I ended up on a Reddit post where someone said, can anyone recommend a miniseries? I've had it with all these TV shows today that if you want to watch them, you've got to watch it's 10 seasons and they're 20 episodes each. I said, it was posted a year ago. I said, what world are you living in?
Are they still watching like CBS television, network television?
I guess. I didn't even think that CBS television was doing that anymore.
I mean, I think they
Some
are.
People
you just
are.
Have never heard
like,
of any
just
of
never
the
heard
shows.
Of the show.
Yeah.
Like, David from, what's his, Boreanaz, is on, like, some TV show that's been at, like, has 9 seasons. I've never even seen a commercial for it.
You're right. Nathan Fillion is on another one of the, yeah. Man, some people are really eating good off of those. Well, anyway, I felt pretty sickened by it. I was like, you complain about the thing we actually don't have. Okay. Let's move on. Oh, God. Oh, God. Oh, God. Guys. I don't want to. Okay. Adam Copeland fought Stokely Hathaway on Dynamite, and he was technically the face, I think. And Stokely, it was technically the heel, I think. Mm. Is that what you took from the match?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Like, I understand
everything about this.
I understand that Stokely has been doing the most heel work that he could, but, like, when I was watching him be tiny and get kicked around the ring and be made fun of, I was like, that's a child. a literal child and you are a bully.
This was actually insane to me in terms of like desire management, in terms of like what you make the audience want. Cause it's like, Stokely's tiny, Cope is beating him up like crazy, which was like one thing. But then he starts like bullying him for being short, bald, and having no hose, which Stokely said about himself last week, which was very funny, especially with his beaten down affect.
Of course.
But when a tall, handsome man says it about a small, bald man, it's not cool. It doesn't make me like the tall, handsome man, I'll tell you that. And then when he goes into the crowd to get the crowd to bully him specifically, it was like, wow. I hate you. I want Stokely to kick your ass so bad right
now. I was
now.
Like, I want him to come back. Like, yeah, and do, like, a David versus Goliath thing and, like, prove, like, you're like, he's like, I'm big and I'm strong and I do get hosed and then kick his ass.
Just because I don't get hosed doesn't mean I don't have worth as a human being. I wanted him to scream.
Seriously. Never... And Copeland came across, like, such an asshole. It was like,
So smarmy.
Like, laughing.
It was fascinating to watch because it was like, wow. So, but are other people watching this and being like, yeah, that was really funny? Like, it was like, it would have worked great if he was the heel. If he was the heel, it would be like, yeah, this is exactly what a heel should be doing. It's like, you know, it was wild to watch. It was like,
it was crazy. And like you've been in wrestling for a really long time. Like, do you not understand what makes a heel a heel? Yeah. Like, I don't understand.
Ostentatious behavior. So then he's just bullying Stokely and he's playing with his food, which is heel behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Everything he does is heel behavior. Everything he's ever done as a face has been heel behavior.
Mm-hmm.
He's playing with his food. FTR creep out looking so stupid. They did the stupidest little run of all time. And it's like, I don't even know what I'm saying at this point, because it's like they looked so dumb, but I was like, it's good they care about their friend, I guess. Like, I guess their faces now is they care about their fucking friend.
I know Cope was like trying to bait them to come out by being mean to Stokely, but it was like, I feel like there would be ways to do it that wouldn't come across so heelish, or it's even like you could say the short ball stuff like in a certain context if you were both like doing it kind of equal promo and Stokely also said really mean things to you, but it was like, this did not
work. I think the thing that's fun is I'm like, does a heel care enough to come out to save somebody because they're being humiliated? That's what was happening, is that he was humiliating. Yeah. I'm like, I feel like a heel would be like, yeah, we all get humiliated sometimes. That's fine.
The Young Bucks would never come out for Brandon. Never a day in their fucking lives.
Yeah.
They would have said, Brandon, good luck out there.
Brandon comes backstage. He is the most ejected he's ever been. He gets maybe one word of praise that's just like, good job out there, Brandon. And then it's like, go get us Starbucks.
Yeah.
Go get us a coffee. And Brandon takes out with a smile. He says, my Young Bucks love me. My Young Bucks thought I did an amazing job out there.
Yeah. This was to the point where I was like, I mean, maybe they're swapping alignment. Like, maybe they are trying to make Cope the heel. Like, after all the stuff with Hangman where I was like, I don't know what they're doing because he's not going to win. Now I'm like, well, I guess we'll see where it's going. But, like, there have been no indications up to this point that they're heel turning anybody.
Deeply confusing stuff. There's a whole back end of this match where FTR are out there and Stokely blows what I've called here Don Callis's powders in Adam Copeland's face, which he had coming to be here.
Yeah.
And then FTR are beating...
And I genuinely liked it as a thing because I was like, the smaller, like, crafty guy topples the evil big man.
He's doing what he has to do.
Yeah.
It's so funny that we're just like, he's sweet, actually. If a man is so annoying and then someone bullies him, it's like, well, hang on.
Yeah. Hey. Well, it's just like everyone wants to root for an underdog. You're making him an underdog. Like, so what do you think is going to happen? It's like
you have every advantage.
Yeah.
And you won't stop talking about it. Oh, God. Anyway, so then FTR are trying to kill Adam Copeland, righteously, pretty much.
Yeah.
And so then Christian runs out with Copeland's bat, I guess, to save him. And then Nick Wayne runs out to kill Christian. And Nick Wayne is also in the right to be clear.
Yeah.
And so he's trying to kill Christian, and Kip Sabian is there, and Mother Wayne is there. And Cope saves Christian. And they drive them all off. And then Cope and Christian are in the ring together. And they bump into each other back to back, which this is where things start to go so wrong. Because what a classic, sexy little move. Oh, who doesn't like to watch? It's they're accidentally fighting off all these enemies together. And then suddenly they're back to back. And it's like, who are you? My enemy? No, we've been fighting for each other. We're saving. And then they're sharing a long look like, what have you, look what you just did for me. Why would you do such a thing? Like, when all I've given you is unkindness, blah, 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 blah. And they're just looking at each other, and commentary is like, kiss, 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 kiss. And then they embrace. Suddenly, they embrace. And you at home might be saying, like, and the whole bus clapped, and you guys loved it because you love kissing. And that's why this hurts so much.
It hurts so much to pan
it's
it.
It's so upsetting.
It feels awful to pan it because it seems like it should be up our alley. And I think someone tweeted at us and was like, this is really going to get tunnel talk. And it should.
We wish.
But it was
soulless. We were so psyched. We've been wanting Cope and Christian to have like a husband's reunion this whole time. Like, it's all I've wanted.
It feels like somebody announced that George Clooney and Julia Roberts were going to star in a rom-com. And it's going to be set in, like, I don't even know, like, the countryside. And it's, like, the set is going to be designed by Nancy Meyer. And, like, like all of the recipes
Nora
is there.
Has come back from
Nora
the dead
Ephron
and
she wrote the script. Yeah. And so, like, you have me on side. I have bought tickets in advance. I've gotten my friends together. We're going. I'm all prepared to love it. And then I'm like, what's soulless, like, empty fucking movie is this? What's happening?
Yeah. It's so crazy. It's like they, like, apart from the alignment stuff and how bad the segment was, it's like they haven't hit any good beats to reconcile them, like, at all.
What I would say, sharper than a serpent's tooth is an unearned kiss.
Yeah.
An unearned
so true.
Kiss. You
so
didn't
true.
Do the work.
No.
You didn't do the work. You didn't pluck the strings. You didn't get me to that point where I'm like, oh my God, they want it and they deserve it and they must have it. No, we got none of it. We got none of it. All I thought was like, why on earth would you come out for him? And then commentaries over there being like, they have a friendship for all time. It's complicated, but it runs deep. And I'm like, yeah, I think it's sexy. Like, knowing that they've known each other their whole lives, of course I think that's fucking sexy. So how did they make this so unsexy?
Ugh. Yeah. I'm so
absolutely
sad.
Absolutely infuriated.
I'm so sad. It should not have gone down like this.
Yeah, and they really should have. It would be so easy to just keep Christian and Cope heels together. They could do a heel rut. And I mean, again, like, leaving open the possibility that they somehow are. But it's like, it would make more sense of the Nick Wayne stuff. Like, certainly all of Cope's behavior in this one. And, like, honestly, two evil guys in love.
Nothing hotter than that.
Imagine, oh God, I love this. If Christian had came out because Cope was beating on Stoke, and then Christian just joined him, and the two of them were beating the shit out of Stoke with the bat, and then they just looked at the camera with shit-eating grins, and then high-fived. I'd be like, okay, now I'm in for it.
If you had the moment where it's like Cope has been talking this big game, he's like, he's an asshole, like, and it's like, well, yeah, Christian said he wasn't. He came out and he owned it. He said he was an asshole, and then you have the moment where, like, Christian's looking at him like, look what we're doing. Look, I'm doing it with you. What do you think this is? What kind of behavior do you think this is? And Cope has to be like, asshole behavior. Yeah. feels pretty good, though.
Feels pretty good.
Wow, being an asshole right next to you and you're being an asshole? Should we fucking make out right now?
Now that's an earned beat right there.
That's
an earned beat. Yeah.
This is hard, man. This is hard.
Such a bummer.
I feel guilty because it feels like, you know, for once we got handed something that I feel like is being pandered to our demographic, you know what I mean? But it's just like, you did it wrong. This, you handed me a plate of food, but it's so salty. I get it. Send it back.
We can't apologize for it's like, we've been very clear about what we want. Earned kisses. We just want, you want, we want the story to go with it. It's porn for girls, okay? It's like, I don't want the pizza guy to say I have a extra large pizza with cock on it. Although actually that would be pretty funny. So.
I mean, if they were doing a pizza guy thing, I might get on board. Yeah,
like if that were in like a Judd Apatow movie, that'd be pretty funny. So, I don't know. It's like, you know, it's rough. It's rough. I've included another screenshot here. The face that Cope was making, because then Christian leaves. They have this big hug, and then Christian leaves, which also was a little like unparsable. It's like, I'm not really sure exactly what happened with either of you in this whole scene. And Cope was looking after him with this face that I was like, that's really good face acting. That's a wonderful face. You look stricken by this.
Remember how hot he was in Percy Jackson?
Yeah, he was really good. That's an asshole role.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It especially feels bad because I think we've been spending the last 6 months being like, can you back the fuck off, Cope? It's fine. He's not doing that bad. You guys are crazy. Let him run around with Christian. Let him stay in the mid-card with Christian. Leave him alone. He's fine. And now it's like, okay, fine. Go get him. Fine. Grab the pitchforks. Go get him.
Yeah, seriously.
It hurts. It really hurts.
It hurts. It does. It feels bad.
And it's like, you can't go back and get that. You can't get that first kiss back. You really can't, you know. Yeah. Once you've blown it, it's gone.
Can't redo it.
Can't redo it. So, anyway, Mercedes, Tekla, and Sky Blue fought Winza, Aminata, and Willow on Dynamite. Athena and Tony, why did I think I was so funny here? Wrestled for the crowd's attention.
Wordplay.
Wow, the spirit of Manolo moved me. Alex Windsor, I think, said Winza repeatedly when going for a pin. She's really leaning into this Pokemon thing. It's so funny. It's so good.
So funny.
She's so cute. Mm-hmm. Athena then went to Tony's balcony and actually started wrestling and beating on her. And meanwhile, down in the ring, there are these post-match fisticuffs going on where Mercedes is beating up on Winza as Athena's like dragging Tony down to the ring. And Athena and Mercedes are having a moment of alignment here. And the alignment is that they both desire to thwart the Pokemon. They said, we must deny the desires of these damnable Pokemon. But Winza and Storm managed to bounce back, and Tony jumps into the ring, and they've driven off their enemies, and Tony shouts, Winza! And Winza shouts, Storm! It's so stupid and so funny.
So stupid.
And Tony issues a challenge to Athena and Mercedes. And she said, you take the high road, I'll take the low road. I start singing. Great. We'll do this in Scotland. Perfect. And I hope you're wearing something underneath your kilts, or else we're going to bareback you all over Glasgow. So tape up your tits and let's tango. And then they tangoed. And you can't find a single thing to fault here. You really can't.
No.
Incredible.
No,
whenever an announcer calls her Alex Windsor with the American R, it feels so wrong.
I know, like, that's not her name. That's not her. Say her name the way she chooses it.
Don't disrespect her Pokemon heritage. Yeah, I mean, I love this. I don't have much to say about it. I just had a really nice time. And
I think is the difficult part about this women's, like, storyline here is that I'm just having such a nice time, and it's very pleasant, and everyone's doing very good work. None of it is incredibly deep, and I don't think like anyone's particularly engaging with their characters, but I'm not mad because I'm having such a pleasant time. But it's also sometimes it's like, okay, well, there's nothing for us to really cover, but not derogatory right now.
Right. Yeah. It's no offense intended, genuinely. Yeah. It's like, this is great. There's just not a lot to unpack about it. It's kind of like all there on the screen, and I love seeing it on the screen. I really like Athena and Mercedes having a little alliance right now where they're both just like, oh, I just want to beat up these annoying women, and okay, so we can do it together. That's great, you know. It's fun. It's
good. Yeah. Doing great little interlocking work. And I can't believe they're going to be in Scotland already, like, next week. That's crazy.
I know.
And then it's
speeding along.
Yield, Forbidden Door, and I'll get excited when you announce that calendar, Tony. Just kidding. I think it'll be fun. Was there anything that you wanted to talk about that you did not get a chance to talk about?
No.
We did it, girls. Another week on the books. And I've been Allie.
I've been Ian.
And I've been Leah.
This has been Tunnel Talk. Our theme is by Chris Corkin. You can find us on Twitter, Twitch, Tumblr. Don't look at me, girls. Don't look at me like that. You can find us on Twitter, Tumblr, Twitch, and Blue Sky at Tunnel Talk Pod. They've turned away from me. Email tunneltalkpod@gmail.com. We have a souvenir stand. You can find it at chop-tees.com. You can find us on our feed, on the Social Suplex Network feed, where you can check out all the other amazing podcasts on the network. And you can find us on the Social Suplex Network Discord. Please rate, review, and subscribe to us wherever you get... Please rate, review, and subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. Stay frosty, and as always, please come back next week.
'Trying to lose weight? It's time to try Hers. At forhers.com/foryou, you can access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss treatments tailored just for you. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits start at just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com apply.